Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
White privilege is just an acknowledgement that our world is uneven. We live in a country that's unequal.
All human beings share solidarity. All of us are made in God's image equally and therefore worthy of dignity. We're all ruined and rebellious against God and therefore calls us solidarity and sin. And we all need the same Savior.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Happy anniversary to me.
Oh, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary.
And my wife, of course.
A cheerful toast and fill it. Happy anniversary.
She's involved in this.
Fill it. Happy anniversary. Oh, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary.
This is Wretched Radio. 31 years ago today, Mrs. Friel, well, she wasn't Mrs. Friel at the time, said I do to me, Mr. Friel. 31 years later, we receive a text from our son-in-law asking, what's the secret to 31 years of marriage? That's a good question, and I think I have the answer, not based on experience, but based on what the Bible says. And my experience informs me that it is true. Typically, when you go to a marriage seminar, a lecture, read a book about it, somebody will regale you with their stories. Well, this happened, then I did this, then she did this, and I did that. And you get principles or lines that you can use, which may or may not be helpful. But basically, the marriage advice boils down to their experience. You don't need my experience. You need truth. It is found in the Bible, and I can tell you my experience substantiates what I would like to suggest to you is the best thing that you can do in marriage. Constantly be asking this singular question, and I'll admit up front, you can tweak it here and there. But basically, if you want to be happily married for 31 years or more, ask and answer the question in every encounter, experience, troubled experience, every bit of rapids that your boat goes down. Ask the question, Friel, are you going to get to it? Make sure you ask the question, what's the point? What's the point? What is this? What are we doing here? What is my goal in this? Okay, that's a lot of questions you can ask, but we're going to stick with what's the point? For instance, what's the point should be asked before marriage. Before you get married, ask yourself the question, why am I doing this? Not like, am I an idiot? But no, why are you doing it? Because I can tell you I was an idiot. Okay, point taken. I still am. But before I got married, I never asked the question. I just dug her and I wanted to get married to her. There you go. That's what marriage was. It's what you do. But that's not the point. Biblically, a marriage is not how the world defines a marriage is supposed to act. The world basically would tell you, well, marriage, it's supposed to make you happy. It will bring you stability. It will help you grow with responsibility. Yeah, all of those things, sure, fine. But that's not the point. Not according to the Bible. The point of the Bible is for your marriage to be a picture of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Sir, you play the role of Jesus. Madam, you play the role of the church. Now act it out. And with that, we understand that to reflect that picture accurately, we individually need to be growing in sanctification, doing it togetherly. Everybody's responsible for their own. But when a marriage union is formed, this is the bond that helps us to grow in sanctification. My goal with my wife is not for her to make me happy. My goal with my wife is for us to paint this picture by growing in holiness together. She helps me. I help her. Together, We sometimes rub each other, sometimes raw, sometimes we get polished. The decision is always ours in those tense moments. But that's the point of marriage. It has nothing to do with happiness. Seriously. Don't worry. It's a fruit. It's a benefit. It'll come with it. But if you're seeking happiness and that's what you're getting married for, rot's a rock, because you are going to have plenty of days where there ain't a whole lot of happiness happening. There's going to be plenty of sin going on from your spouse and from you. You don't know what a sinner you are until you get married. And furthermore, you don't know what your dumpling darling is really like until you say, I do, and the honeymoon is over, and you just start living together. I had no idea she could do that. I thought he was... That was supposed to be my impression of a woman. I thought that he was Prince Charming, and he's just falling off of his horse all the time. Don't be surprised, because that's what two people do when they get together under one roof. They sin. And if you're seeking happiness when you get married, how are you going to deal with sin? What are you going to do with it? How are you going to respond to it? Just suck it up? Well, okay, there's times you got to do that, but you need something more. And that brings us to asking the question, what's the point when there's sin in the house? When you get into a tussle because somebody ain't behaving the way that you want them to, and this is a pretty safe rule, it's not perfect, but anytime there's conflict, usually, if not always, both parties bear some responsibility. Some. Not, maybe not all, but some. There's usually two criminals in every marriage crime that takes place, not one. And when those times come, if you don't ask the question, what's the point? You're going to need strategies. You're going to have to watch a lot of Dr. Phil, and you don't want to have to do that. You need to ask the question, what's the point? Okay, so there's sin in the home. What's the point? Well, the point of my marriage is the gospel. Therefore, I need to be applying the gospel to this situation so that we can both grow in godliness. That means I don't see things that get up my nose as mere annoyances. I see them as sins, and that means they need to be dealt with, whether it's her, whether it is me. They need to be repented of. They need to be forgiven. They need healing, because that's what the gospel does. And if you don't ask that question, 31 years, 31 months is going to be a beating for you. 31 months of fireworks going off. If you don't answer the question, what's the point? Now you've got kids. And lo and behold, your little cherubs start sinning, which, by the way, is usually just about immediately. Your kids start sinning, and you are going to be inclined to forget the question and answer to what's the point. What's the point in raising kids? What are you driving for with kids? What do you want for them? If it's for them to be a well-behaved child, deficient, to get good grades, deficient, to be an upstanding citizen, deficient, all fine things, but it's not the point. You want your child to love the Lord Jesus Christ more today than he or she did yesterday. That's kind of catchy. I think that could be put to music. Maybe. You want your child to grow in godliness. That will elicit a radically different response from you when you come home and lo and behold, there is a mess all over the house. There's yelling and screaming. Hold it. What's the point? My kids need Jesus. They need to repent. They need to love him more, and then they will love each other more. Now you engage. If you don't engage like that, then you're just going to be a behavioral modifier. You are just going to be the corrective parent, constantly dealing with things and telling them what to do and how to act and how to sit and how to talk. And it's exhausting, frankly. But when you ask the question, what's the point? Oh, yeah. I want my kid to love Jesus more today. I challenge you to engage with your child, even when they have been horribly naughty, with that as the goal. Go ahead and try to be snarky or mean or condescending or disgusted. Can't be, because that's not the point. We don't have children to make ourselves happy. Don't worry, they provide lots of that, but that's not the point. So in answer to the anniversary question, how did this particular marriage survive 31 years? It's by remembering the point. That's what the Bible says, and I can tell you experientially, when we are both thinking with the same framework of what the point of marriage, of dealing with sin, raising children, when we're thinking it's about the gospel, it's about glorifying God, it's about loving Jesus more, I'm telling you, it works. It just plain works. It is so powerful. Whatever the stains are in your marriage, whatever the damage that has been done with your children, I'm telling you, the gospel applied to marriage, parenting, and home, it works. If you have not been answering what's the point questions correctly, today's the day to chart a new course for your marriage and for your family to be a gospel-centered home. This is Wretched Radio. Here are three words that can strike terror in the heart of any Christian. Open Enrollment Month. The three words that can make you shudder if you have to renew or find a new health insurance program. Did you know every month is an open enrollment month with MediShare? Affordable biblical health care sharing, a huge savings per family, on average $500 per month. You have access to a massive doctor network and MediShare's free 24/7 telehealth option. It shouldn't be a surprise that MediShare's double the customer satisfaction ratings compared with typical health insurance. So instead of experiencing the terrors this year, how's about getting in touch with MediShare? You can do that by calling 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE, or visit MediShare.com/wretched.
2021 has been the best yet at Wretched, and I'm not sure I have enough time to even cover it all, but let's try. This year we rolled out a new curriculum of Wretched Bible Studies. Drive-By Biblical Counseling 3 was released. Wretched Worldview hit the streets. Tom Hammond's newest booklet, Solving the God Puzzle, became available, and Season 2 of Road Trip to Truth was released. And that's just our big resource releases this year. We can't forget about our big move over the summer or the fact that as of today, Wretched Radio can be heard on over 800 radio stations worldwide. Wretched TV can be found on over 135 Christian networks, our YouTube channel, almost 4 million hours watched this year alone, and none of this would be possible without our gospel partners. During this year-end season, would you please prayerfully consider becoming a gospel partner? 2022 promises to be our best yet with our new documentary series, Transform, set to be released, highlighting the life-changing power of biblical counseling. So visit wretched.org/donate or text the word wretched to the number 44321 to become a gospel partner today.
You are a pro-life Christian, which is redundant, who happens to be frugal, which is unnecessary to point out because that's what we Christians are, frugal, and you would like to support a life ministry that stewards your money well. Some great news from Preborn Ministries. They have saved 169,000 babies' lives. What is their secret? Ultrasounds. 80% of the time a woman sees her baby, she chooses life. Right now, Preborn has a matching grant. $28 per ultrasound turns into two ultrasounds. Or for $140, you can sponsor five ultrasounds, but because of the match, you'll be saving 10 babies. The ideal time for you to support a life ministry who's going to steward your money well. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, #250, keyword baby, or visit preborn.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 270 AD. A wealthy young man named Antony gives away his possessions and begins life as a hermit. Disciples follow his example, and the first monastic movement began.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Here we go.
You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
This is Wretched Radio. Prepare to play one of America's fastest growing game sensations. Which quote is the most stunning? That's right. Which of the following quotes is the most memorable, the most impactful? Friel, we don't need you to be a thesaurus. That's a speaker's trick, by the way. I don't know if you've ever picked that up. But when a speaker needs a little bit of time to think, they will choose a word. Then they'll repeat it in different ways. So I was driving in my car, my automobile, my transportation device. It just buys some time. I wasn't doing that. I'm just pointing out that's what some speakers do. Which of the following quotes from the big court case that has now been heard at the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, the legislative wing in American politics? This is a big one. Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. Mississippi, they passed a law. 15 weeks I was going to say deadline, and that's exactly right. The deadline for you to have an abortion, that's the law that was passed. Is it a perfect law? No, it's 15 weeks short. But it's better than 24 weeks or 36 or whatever arbitrary number they choose. If the Supreme Court upholds it and just as is, there are people who are talking about Roe v. Wade getting flip-flopped and this going right back to the states where it belongs for the states to make these decisions. We'll see what they decide. And might I just inject this thought for your consideration? You might want to be thinking about how you're going to react based on their decision. There's basically three positions. They're going to go, we don't like the law. Done. Nope, you can't have that law. And then we are going to be at square. We're going to be right back to 5 years ago. Pick a number where it's like, okay, all right, fine. There could be a mixture where they say, we're going to uphold that law. We're going to say that law is legal, but this has nothing to do with Roe v. Wade or Roe v. Casey. Okay, that is a possibility. The other one, of course, is that they uphold it and say, thumbs up. Now, which way they go, we will find out in the future. God only knows. Lots of people pontificating based on past comments about the life issue. But I think we would do well to ask ourselves the question, how am I going to do if they decide, I have to confess to you, I think it's going to require us to do some rethinking on the issue. I am still going to be an incrementalist, happy that any advancement is made in life while never being satisfied that there are still babies who can be killed in the womb of their mother. And having said that, I wonder if we have been speaking perhaps as forcefully as we need to on this issue. Because right now, let's be honest, what the incrementalist side of the pro-life movement has been after, the golden apple has been the Supreme Court. And if we can elect enough people who are conservative to appoint conservative judges, then Roe v. Wade is out of here. And I would argue, and I know, believe me, I'm fully aware of Kavanaugh's waffling, certainly John Roberts' waffling, but I don't know that we'll ever do better than today, right now, with the dynamic that's on the court. Most people say it's 6-3, conservative versus liberal. Now, I know I'm not naive. I understand they're not all that conservative, but are we going to ever do better? Are we ever going to get 9 conservative judges? I don't think so. So if this thing gets thumbs downed, I don't know that that's a verb or not. We got to think about how this could possibly change. And I think, brace yourself for this, I think we could learn some lessons from the playbook of the gender-changing, sexuality-redefining movement that has swept the nation. What have they done? They've persuaded people that it's okay to be gay. They have persuaded people that you can identify as any gender that you want to. That's staggering. When I was a kid, neither of those was even remotely socially acceptable. But they have worked very hard at changing people's minds. Now, obviously, they're not changing them in the right direction, but they've changed them. And it seems to me that we should be thinking like that, too. And I will forever be a SLED guy, where we use an acronym to help us to always defend the life issue: size, level of development, environment, degree of dependency. Yes, because we can argue the life issue and win every single time. But I just wonder, how are we messaging this? How are we positioning this? Are we being biblically prophetic on this issue? Is it maybe time to consider the language that we're using? I'm just asking some questions here. Now, there's two ways that you could answer the language question and the framing of the argument question. I think one of the directions you could go is making it the this is why the rainbow movement has gained so much ground. You make it a story. It's very personal. Very personal. Don't you want that person to be happy? How could you possibly not want them to be who they were made to be? How could you be so cruel? So it's putting a spotlight on the, can't we do better than that? That's one road. Here's another road. And I know that this is a debated subject. We stop calling it abortion, and we call it infanticide. We stop saying that it's the intentional taking of an innocent human life, which is the correct, thorough definition of abortion. And we start utilizing language that the Bible uses. I'm talking about the M word here. That it's perhaps time for us to take a look at our approach to this issue. And my encouragement to you, because I'm certainly not going to be the one who writes the pro-life playbook, but an encouragement today to start thinking about how you're going to react tomorrow when the verdict is handed down. Are we going to learn something from it? Are we going to gain something, glean something from this that can perhaps help in the future? We might want to be having those conversations right now. But that really wasn't the point of this segment.
You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
Focus, Jimmy. Focus.
The truth. You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
Eric, what are we calling this thing? This is which quote is wow. That's it. Because some of them are rotten. Some of them are good. Jimmy, as always, you will represent the tens and tens of people listening to this here wretched radio program.
I'm ready.
You're their federal head.
Okay.
Are you prepared for this responsibility?
Yes.
Quote number one, Clarence Thomas, who has not asked a question during proceedings for 10 years. I'd love to be able to have dinner and ask him why. Why didn't you ask questions for a decade in this one? I'm speculating, but I suspect he's been holding fire because everybody's just gobsmacked. Whoa, wait, what? We didn't even know he could speak. He asked a question, and it's a good one. I don't think it's a great one, but I think it's a good one. Does a mother have a right to ingest drugs and harm a pre-viable baby? Can the state bring child neglect charges against the mother? That's a good question. Because child neglect, we all realize, oh, that's a bad thing. Not allowing your child to live, at the very least, would be neglect. Why do I think that question could be better? Because I think it doesn't address the issue. Then the issue is, what is it? Because this is the debate. It assumes that a pre-viable baby is an innocent human being. And that's why I think that particular question falls. It's good. Falls short. That's quote number one, Jimmy. The folks who are arguing the case to defend the Roe v. Wade view said, quote, "That's not what this case is about. But a woman has a right to make choices about her body." And see, that's why she was able to get away with that defense, because the question wasn't as airtight as it should be. I think the moral to this story is obvious. Clarence Thomas needs to get a copy of Life is Best available at wretched.org. His questions would be a little bit tighter. Jimmy, two quotes, yes. But because you got lost in the weeds, like the Carpenters, we've only just begun. And Paul Williams, remember Paul Williams actually wrote that?
Really?
How do I know this? Oh, I just want to curl up in a corner and cry. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. Well, we start today with one of the most honorable and sincerest things you'll hear this week, maybe even this year. Okay, that's sarcasm. Here's the story, though. Vice President Kamala Harris believes that President Joe Biden is, quote, a man of deep faith. Okay, so I'm not going to ridicule the president or vice president here. That's the easy thing to do. And honestly, I do struggle with my posture towards the leaders I don't agree with. But what I am going to do is point out that I cannot and will not take seriously that quote from our vice president, because this administration fights and continues to fight for the murdering of innocent babies. A man of deep faith would not be okay with a law that's led to the murder of 63 million innocent lives. So this isn't ridicule toward the office of president. It's a statement of fact in regards to this ridiculous quote made by our vice president. Look, just be honest with the people and stop portraying yourselves as something you're not. Do you remember how we used to identify people who targeted others based solely on their skin color? We used a term for that. What was it? Oh, yeah, racist. But it seems that that term isn't applicable these days, at least not when the Black Lives Matter organization perpetrates the racism. The national arm of the BLM organization is leading a boycott of, quote, white companies. I'm not even sure how you define a white company, but here's some text from an Instagram post from these geniuses. Quote, "Skip the Black Friday sales and buy exclusively from Black-owned businesses. That means no spending with white companies through January 1st, 2022. Again, how can we determine who to avoid? What's a white company? I guess we all celebrate the holidays by segregating. So, merry segregation, y'all, courtesy of Black Lives Matter. And here's a survey that really doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Lifeway recently asked just over 1,000 Americans the biblical Christmas story, and only 22% of those surveyed could relay the story, and this becomes an actual released survey by Lifeway. Look, I don't find this to be worthwhile information. Actually, it's kind of nefarious to expect anyone who isn't a Christian to tell you the story of a Christian holiday. What's the purpose of polling just Americans and not specifically Christians? Because that's the information that would be useful. Identify Christians who can't retell the biblical Christmas story. That gives us helpful data, Lifeway. Come on, do better. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Books of the Bible. The book of Numbers tells the story of Israel's wandering in the desert for 40 years. The journey from Egypt to Canaan should have only taken 11 days, but Israel's grumbling and disobedience angered God, and none of the Israelites were allowed to enter the promised land. But God remained faithful and led their children into their inheritance. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Focus, Friel. I mean it. Focus.
You be the judge.
Well, we don't have time for that. This is Wretched Radio. Let's get to the many quotes that have been heard at the big Supreme Court hearing Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. Don't ask me when we started calling the taking of an innocent human life women's health. Oh, yeah, I know when we decided we're not going to be intellectually honest and tell you we just want to kill it. Because it's a life, and we all know that, because dead things don't grow. And what's in the womb, it is growing immediately. That means we all get it. We are intentionally taking a life. Now, whether you think that life has value, that is a separate question. But to argue that it's not an actual life is intellectually dishonest. And all of the chin boogie and all of the new defining of words and all the fog, there is so much fog surrounding the pro-life debate.
How much fog
is
it?
Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you. Wow, that was a little too enthusiastic. There's more fog surrounding this issue than the stage of a mega church worship service on Sunday morning. That's a lot of fog. Would they please be honest? Look, we want to kill it. Whatever it is, we want to end it. That's our position. Just isn't the way that we talk. Wondering if we should, by the way. And incidentally, perhaps one of the quotes in our competition would be from the Mississippi governor, Tate Reeves. He said this, and he was at some prayer meeting. Now, I think too many politicians are afraid to say it, but I'll say it. Abortion is barbaric. Abortion is evil. It's probably the greatest evil of our day. Every single day in America, thousands of children lose their God-given inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. No, thousands of women are getting health care. Thank you, sir, for your stance on that. And by the way, thank you to the governor of Mississippi, who's in the center of this little Supreme Court Lollapalooza. He was being interviewed on a morning program and being challenged. Hey, you say that right to life is an important thing. So why don't you want to have a vaccine mandate? In an interview with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press, the governor was asked how he reconciles the opposition to vaccine mandates with his support for the controversial Mississippi law restricting abortion after 15 weeks of gestation. He responded that those comparing vaccine mandates and abortion laws like Mississippi's, quote, absolutely ignore the fact that in getting an abortion, there's an actual killing of an innocent unborn child that is in the womb. Thank you. There's a little bit of a difference. Here's what we know about babies that are 15 weeks, which I'm not a fan of saying that arguing for 15 weeks. It's just the incremental advancement that seems to be at least achievable right now. He said, we know that they have a heartbeat. We know that those babies actually can open and close their hands, which, by the way, is not the pro-life argument. He's making a different point, however. The pro-life argument is whether its hands operate, whether its heart is beating, it's a human being. It's an image bearer of God. We don't trespass and violate God's command to not murder. And that's the pro-life position. The governor is trying to make another point that what is done to a 15-week-old is different than a vaccination. We know that they have developing lungs, and we know that those babies, 15 weeks, can feel pain. And again, whether they can feel pain or not is irrelevant. That's not what a vaccine is. The vaccine, whether you like it or not, the intention of it is to save life. That's not the intention of abortion, needless to say. Jimmy,
yes.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
Would you be shocked if I told you I'm all out of order here?
No, I would not be.
I have no idea. You're going to have to keep track of which quote was the most whatever this is that we're doing.
Okay.
Here's a quote. Did we ever get to Justice Alito and John Roberts?
No, I don't think so.
Focus, Friel, focus. They questioned the viability line, with Alito referencing those who have said the line really doesn't make any sense. I agree, but a pro-abort would see that different than a pro-lifer. We see it as arbitrary. We don't think that it is something that should that determines the value of what is in the womb, whether it's viable or not. It's what it is. That's always the big question. John Roberts, why is 15 weeks not enough time? Number six, Justice Brett Kavanaugh, one of the conservatives, suggested the court should leave the issue of abortion to Congress and the states and, quote, return to the position of neutrality. Well, I think that they should take a look at laws when they when the cases are brought before them. That's their purpose. But this should be a states' right issue, not a federal mandate. And the Supreme Court is not the body that can make that mandate. That's supposed to come from the legislative branch. Quote number seven, Justice Elena Kagan said the court doesn't easily overturn past decisions. That prevents people from thinking this court is a political institution. No. No. Wait, what are you suggesting? That it might be a political institution and we don't want people to have that perception? Then stop being a political institution. Are you kidding me? What is her argument? From a logical fallacy standpoint, can you hear the fallacy in her argument? She said this. I think Sotomayor. Sotomayor. She said this, and you'll hear the same fallacy. Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts? If people actually believe that it's all political, how will we survive? How will the court survive? What is that? Hello, Mott and Bailey. You remember the Mott and Bailey. Say something that's agreeable. Hey, we don't want the Supreme Court to be perceived as a political institution. That's the safe position. We'd all agree with that. But then when they hit the Bailey, when they hit the streets, that translates into women should have the right to kill their babies no matter how old or young it is, maybe even outside of the womb. And then you say, wait, whoa. The fact is that's a life in there. That's an innocent human being. Do you want the Supreme Court to be besmirched? Oh, Mott and Bailey, the old switcheroo. It's begging the question. And it is a classic argument that is being used so often these days. Give the safe position. Give a ridiculous application, and then when anybody questions the application, you run back to the presupposition for your defense. Pathetic from a Supreme Court judge. Quote number 9, 10, 11, I don't know what we're on, Jimmy. This is from Brett Kavanaugh. The conclusion that abortion is a constitutional right has no basis in text, structure, history, or tradition. Thank you for that. Because that's the argument. I'm telling you, this word game that they have been playing, sensationally, by the way, has really been impactful. We now talk about abortion like it's a constitutional right. It started out, everybody knew that this was a nasty procedure. And then because of Roe v. Wade, we started saying, well, that a woman has a right to abortion. Uh-oh, we don't like the word abortion. She has the right to choice. Now we're at the Constitution gives you the right to choose? How did that happen? It's a war of words, and I'll be honest with you. We don't want to play that game, but we might want to learn from that game because we're truth people. We don't do chin boogie. We're not the smoke and mirrors orators. We are the truth tellers. So I don't think we want to start playing the same game and pull the same Mott and Baileys, but I think we need to identify them and call them out when they happen. All righty, Jimmy.
You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
So, which one of these quotes?
It's the most memorable.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah, I think a couple of them. I can't pick two.
One.
Okay, the last one. The one that specifically mentions that abortion is not a constitutional right.
Oh.
That's not the one you wanted me to pick. I didn't get the memo. I'm sorry.
We should have done some prep. I think the one that struck me was the governor of Mississippi.
Oh, yeah, that one too.
Being willing to go, hey, look, this is a barbaric practice. This is evil. And no matter what the outcome of this particular decision is, we might do well to take a look at how we are discussing this issue, arguing this issue, presenting this issue, to start persuading people that abortion is abhorrent and it needs to be stopped totally, completely, not viability, not number of weeks or heartbeat or the ability to squeeze their hand. No, because it is a whole innocent human being made in the image of God himself. This is Wretched Radio.
Hell, it seems like everywhere you look, you find a survey about something these days. And of course, Wretched, we didn't want to miss out on this trend, so we conducted our own survey. Actually, I just asked a couple of people across the hall, but here are the results. When asked, what's your favorite part of Christmas? 100% of respondents said, celebrating the birth of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Without Christ, there's no reason for Christmas. Without Christ, there's no reason for Wretched. We realize we can't do any of this without you. It wouldn't be possible to produce the content and resources that we do without the support of our gospel partners. During this time of year where we should all reflect on the true meaning of Christmas, would you prayerfully consider becoming a gospel partner and help us to continue reaching the lost all over the world? Just visit wretched.org/donate. That's wretched.org/donate, or text the word wretched to the number 44321.
And now a message from our dear brother Paul Marty of the Tomorrow Club's Kids Bible Clubs all throughout Eastern Europe. Just in case it isn't difficult enough to do ministry in poor Eastern Europe.
2020 has been a challenging year for all of us, and especially hard for the vulnerable kids and families that Tomorrow Club serve. But support from the Wretched audience has enabled us to continue to bring a message of hope, the gospel of Jesus Christ, to the forsaken places we serve. Thank you so much.
If you are a Tomorrow Club supporter, I echo his gratitude. If you are not, would you please consider becoming a Tomorrow Club supporter? You can sponsor your own kids club in Eastern Europe so efficiently. Just $30 per month to disciple 30 kids. Learn more at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Thank you for listening to Wretched Radio today. Hey, I don't know if you've noticed, but Wretched.org earlier this year got a facelift, and you should go take a gander at all of the changes. You'll still find full-length Wretched TV and Wretched Radio episodes, but here's something new. You can now watch the entire Wretched Radio episodes from the Daily Radio Show post. You can listen and now watch the entire show. And that's not the only change you'll notice at Wretched.org, so go check it out as you get some time. And we want to take just a moment to thank our gospel partners for making it happen. Running a website takes a lot of time, effort, and resources, but changing a website can sometimes take even more, and so we're grateful for all of our gospel partners. So when you visit wretched.org, take a peek at our donate page and find out how you can become an ongoing monthly Wretched Gospel partner too. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Revelation. God has revealed himself through many means, including the conscience. God has given each person a conscience so that they can understand his moral standard and their failure to keep that standard. While the conscience can be deadened and twisted by sin, every human being has an innate knowledge of God's law. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's go back in time. Eventually, this is Wretched Radio. Before I take you back in time to learn a historical lesson that has contemporary application, especially these days if you happen to be in Liverpool, but perhaps anywhere on the globe, would like to share some very good news with you. This just does my cold conservative heart good. I received a picture. Jimmy, maybe you can see it. I don't know if you can actually read it. Why? Because it's actually in Spanish. The book is 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide. It was translated by Stephen Kelly Maury, Baptist missionaries to Spain since 1987. Well done, you two. Talk about faithfulness. They contacted us and said, we'd like to distribute this, but because with the printing and the shipping and, well, and you know, these days with the shipping lines and, oh, the delivery mechanisms, how shouldn't our president be working on it to fix it rather than just bellyaching about it? I'm just saying, wouldn't that be
part of it? That's a good idea.
But we're not political commentators here. In Spain, they asked, can we print this booklet so that they can just print it there? So they had to translate it first. Well, it's done. It's been printed, and it is now being distributed in Spain. 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Kill Yourself and 13 Reasons Why You Should Live. How encouraging is that? Another piece of good news, perhaps for you, before we go back in time, would be considering the day that it is. It's open enrollment time for insurance. And you say, no, it's not. That's November. That's the only time that I can get insurance or change insurance policies. The month is November. Not with MediShare. Every month is open enrollment month. That means you can start with them anytime. And I would encourage you to do that now. They are waiving the application fee, which I think is $175. It's not a ridiculous fee, but it's still $175. Blotto, and don't forget, families tend to save on average $500 per month. Is it right for your family? Visit MediShare.com/wretched. MediShare.com/wretched. Check it out and perhaps be introduced to a great biblical alternative. It's affordable, biblical, health sharing, MediShare, MediShare.com/wretched. Open enrollment month is now. Let's go back in time, shall we? Wait a second. That's the second time I hit the harp gliss. Does that mean we came back in time now? Did I goof that up?
I think we went back even farther than you intended.
Then let me just adjust the clock a little bit here. Isn't it funny with all those movies where you go back to the future and all that? You just have to think for a second. Well, how could that work? And the answer is it can't. I mean, it'd have to be like another universe. And what second would every universe be on? That sec or just when you enter it, it gets created. It's just dopey. Nevertheless, we're going to Michael J. Fox and go back in time. Why? There was a bombing in Liverpool. And the fellow who did it claimed to be a Christian. Uh-oh. That's certainly a problem because we don't hear these stories very often, do we? When it comes to mass shootings, when it comes to bombings and terror attacks, usually the religion that is invoked is not Christian. In this instance, it is. November 14th, a man detonated an improvised explosive device near the main entrance at the Liverpool Women's Hospital in England. He's the only one who died. He arrived in the UK in 2014. He then, shortly thereafter, converted from Islam to Christianity. In 2015, he was baptized. 2017, confirmed at the Liverpool Cathedral, who claims to have a pretty stringent standard to make sure that they don't have people who pretend to be Christians who are actually Muslims because they think they'll get better treatment by the government. This has happening a lot. And now people are going, whoa, wait a second, what's the deal? It's usually exclusively Muslims who are blowing up women's hospitals. Is this guy a Christian? I think we know the answer to that is no, he was not, because a genuine born-again Christian doesn't detonate an explosive with the intention of murdering people. Now, in jihad, that's perfectly acceptable. In fact, quite commendable. So what was this guy? Because you heard the timeline. So for give or take 3 years, he was pretending to be a Christian. So what do we do with that? Let's go back in time, shall we? History offers us an especially applicable example. In 1492, Granada, the final Muslim bastion of Spain, was reconquered. Its Muslims were initially granted lenient terms, including the right to travel abroad and practice Islam freely. But guess what? They They didn't quite follow the rules. Knock me over with an Islamic feather. Whenever the opportunity arose, they launched many hard-to-quell uprisings, several involving the stoning, dismembering, beheading, impaling, and burning alive of Christians, and regularly colluded with foreign Muslim powers, the Ottoman Turks, in an effort to subvert Spain back to Islam. So they tried to coexist with the religion of peace, and they didn't play well. No, not all of them, but it was a big problem. The Spanish crown eventually issued an edict that Muslims either had to convert to Christianity, that's never a good idea, and therefore slough off their jihadist animus or quit the peninsula. So you either become a Christian or you skedaddle. In response, the entire population of Granada, hundreds of thousands of Muslims, openly embraced Christianity. Oh, you mean what that guy did has happened before? Yeah, and history tells us what that looked like and how it worked out. They openly embraced Christianity but remained crypto-Muslims. In other words, we do our five pillars behind closed doors, act like Christians when they're watching us. Publicly, they went to church, they baptized their children. And by the way, it's not a violation of their religion, because if you're doing it for the cause, you can sin. You don't have to be consistent. You can be blasphemous. You can do anything you want to under the umbrella of jihad, advancing the cause of the kingdom of Allah. They went to church, baptized their kids. At home, they recited the Quran and preached undying hate for the infidel and their obligation to resubjugate Spain to Islam. And all this deception was legitimized by the fatwas of leading Islamic clerics. You got a fatwa? Do what you need to do. One historian explains the great length those Moriscos, that's Muslim converts to Christianity who were still Islamic or Moorish. This is how the extent that they would go to deceive people. For a Morisco to pass as a good Christian took more than a simple statement to that effect. It required a sustained performance involving hundreds of individual statements and actions of different types, many of which might have little to do with expressions of belief or ritual per se. Taqiyya, dissimulation, was an institutionalized practice in Morisco communities that involved regular patterns of behavior passed on from one generation to the next. So they faked it. They were lying. They weren't Christians. They were Muslims with a fatwa and an agenda. A frustrated Spaniard remarked in the 17th century, quote, "They could feign any religion outwardly and without sinning as long as they kept their hearts nevertheless devoted to their false impostor of a prophet. We saw so many of them who died while worshiping the cross and speaking well of our Catholic religion, yet who were inwardly excellent Muslims." What do we do with the guy in Liverpool? That. And even if that wasn't taking place and he thought he was a Christian, he wasn't. Because remember, Christians don't blow up people. Generation after generation of Muslims pretended to be and lived as model Christians in Spain, even as they had nothing but hatred for Christianity and Christians, and all to remain and eventually reconquer Spain for Islam. This is not the only time in history we've seen this. 2013. Oh, wait a second. In 2013... I had to get us up to speed. 2013, an assassination plot against a Christian pastor in Turkey was exposed. 14 Muslim suspects, including at least three women, were arrested. According to the pastor, two of them attended our church for over a year, and they were like family. One was even baptized. These people had infiltrated our church and collected information about me, my family, and the church, and were preparing an attack against us. Do we need any more history to have some clarity about what happened in Liverpool when a supposed Christian who used to be a Muslim, but most likely still was, blew up, or at least attempted to blow up innocent people? No. I think we got that. Maybe one other lesson. And wow, am I glad I got to wait a few seconds here, Jimmy. The show is almost over because what I'm going to say is really going to get up somebody's nose. See, the problem, we see the problem with forcing people to act like Christians when they're not. Which is maybe why we shouldn't be forcing corporations to have their employees say Merry Christmas when they don't believe it. Oh, look at the time. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.